Hey guys, welcome back to Convince Me with Larry Smith, brought to you by the Front Row Network, NPR Illinois. I've got a great show today. Talking to a buddy of mine, Jeremy Nunez, who has an Amazon special, a Dry Bar special, multiple albums. I'm going to be talking about this later on. He also beat me for the Illinois Times Best Comedian. So please boo this man when you hear him. No. Not really. He's a good dude, really funny guy, and really excited to have him on. We talk about some really fun stuff. So thanks for listening, and I promise we'll be more better about posting regularly. Thanks. All right, like the intro said, this is another episode of Convince Me, and I am your host, Larry Smith. I don't know if I should be doing that or not anymore, since there's a whole theme song with the with talking over, and you keep tuning in, or you don't, and this is your first time. Anyway, if this is your first time, my gosh, you picked a great... Oh, and you can say whatever you want. We put an E next to our... Just so you know, Jeremy.
A what?
An E for explicit. You wouldn't know anything about that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know what the E meant.
But, I know I say this with a lot of my interviews, but it is a good friend of mine that I'm talking to.
Oh, well, thanks, Larry.
Yeah. I'm not saying my best friend. Like, I'm not going to show up for, you know, I would help you move a couch, but I'm not going to help you move your entire house. Does that make sense?
I'm in. Yep.
Yeah, that's I think that's where the level of friendship. he's got a special coming out on Amazon soon. He's got multiple albums. You were on Last Comic Standing. You've been in movies. And I don't remember was it The Layover? Was one of them.
The Layover, The Breakup.
A lot of those.
Yeah. And then TV did Final Witness on ABC, which I have a great story about if you want to get into that later.
Oh, absolutely.
But and I think, I don't know. I have to look at the list sometimes because I've been doing comedy 20 years, and about once every 4 years something exciting happens.
Right.
So I have to think back to 16 years ago. What was that thing I did the small thing in, you know?
I understand that. Yeah. What was that? What was that independent film that nobody ever saw that I was in?
Yeah.
I'll add that as a credit. It's funny. But anyway, this is my friend and paragon of clean comedy, Jeremy
Nunez. Thanks, man.
No, you're just I will want to talk about that a little bit. I'm sure you talk to a lot of people about the clean comedy thing.
Sure.
But you and I have spent a lot of time in a car. So I'm trying to think of all the stuff that we've talked about and not talk about that.
Okay.
But you did get your start up in, you started here in Springfield area and then went up to Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
So in 2001, I did my first ever open mic, which was at then the Funny Bone, Springfield, Illinois. It has since switched to Donnie B's Funny Bone and then just Donnie B's. But so I did the open mic there, and I had always wanted to be an improviser rather than a stand-up. And so what happened was people kept pushing me, like, why don't you do stand-up? People outside of the biz don't quite realize how significantly different they are.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, I want to do some sort of fighting. I'm leaning toward boxing. And they're like, well, why don't you do karate? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
It's kind of in the broad spectrum. Yeah, I guess they fall in the same category, but it's
they're
not
combat sports.
Yes.
But they're not the same.
So I did the open mic at Donnie's, or sorry, the Funny Bone at the time. And I was a huge Chris Farley fan. So basically, I just did a Chris Farley bit for 5 minutes. I was like falling down and I was swearing. I was, oh, son of a. Uh-huh. I was just doing all this. And then like everyone's just kind of like looking around. I saw you have a thing on your Twitter of like somebody replying to you. It says, is this comedy?
Yes.
I heard a guy say that.
Yeah, if you check my banner on Twitter, all the best comments I've ever received, whether they're insults or I think the most recent one, so I hadn't noticed it was on a tweet that had gone pretty well, And somebody had posted something about the come F me eyes that I was like, well, that goes right next to have you put on weight and is this comedy? I was like, that goes right up there on the banner.
So now back then, you used to have to pay $5. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have to pay $5 to get on the stage, and it was like a gambling thing.
And 10 to get off.
But then, like, Donnie and maybe Don Jr. and, like, the bartender, whoever, who booked the openers back then, would, like, decide who the winner was, and the winner got the money, or maybe most of it, and they paid, like, a second and third place. I don't remember. But, oh, and it was terrible. So nobody laughs.
Right.
And I was like, well, I'll never do that again. Right. And then it takes me like a year for people pushing me to go back. So in 2002, might have my years off. No. So it would have been like July 2002, roughly. I go back and I win. And this is how quickly it goes to my head. Where this guy.
Oh, no.
This friend, this guy who. I know exactly who to compare him to, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
He was just around all the time and just not, like,
mm-hmm.
not good. Mm-hmm. He was just there, always. And but he was a nice guy. And then, and he's like, and this winner tonight is Jeremy Nunes. And the guy turns, like, high-five me, and I, like, dodged him and went straight to the stage.
Oh, no. Get away from me, nerd. I finally get to sit at the cool kid table.
Yeah. I was like, why would I have that guy? He sucks.
He walked in the next day, quit your job. I'm like, I'm going to go be a star.
So that was summer 2002. Then I went to Carbondale for college. So that would have been the middle of my college. So my junior year of college, I go to Carbondale. And was starting to do a little bit of comedy down there, which is where Hannibal Buress went to college.
Right.
So Hannibal and I did shows together all the time. There was a bar that Funny Business, the Yoder family, booked. And so national comedians came through every Wednesday there. And two of the local college kids got to do 2 minutes before, you know, the very talented nationally touring feature act made their way through, you
uh-huh.
know. But back then I was like, oh, this guy, look how good this guy is, you know. And then now I'm like, you know, oh, this guy, you know what I mean? But so it was me, Hannibal, and one other person were like the three-person rotation, so
right.
You get to do it for 2 weeks, then you're off for a week or whatever. So did that, but you didn't get paid. And then the first time, I've got my framed dollar up there if you can see it, May, and that's how I know, May 30, 2003, was a bar in Jacksonville, and the guy came to the open mic at what was probably maybe then Donnie B's Funny Bone, and was like, hey, I thought you're pretty good up there. You know, I'm trying to put together this comedy over at, you know, my bar in Jacksonville, if you don't mind. Now, which you've heard the story of. I've told the first.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Should I tell it? Or should
Absolutely.
Okay. So, so I go to do that. Now, they have chicken wire in front of the stage, right?
It's very Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now, so remember, I'm still very new to comedy. So if you throw out the 1 year where I didn't do anything at all, that was 03. I've been doing comedy almost 1 year at that point, okay? So as comics, at that point, I had 5 minutes. I had my 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of people probably recognize comedians, if they're talking about something and the people don't think it's funny, they'll switch subjects, right? Well, if all I got is my 5 minutes, I can't go anywhere else.
Exactly.
Even if I recognize there's a problem, I'm like, well, I was told to do 5 minutes. I don't have anything to switch to, by the way. So I get into it, and I was doing a bit about, it was something to do with, like, a prominent fast food. I won't say the name because we're on a prominent podcast. But so a prominent fast food group was selling like quarts or half gallon sized jugs of soda you could get at that point.
Oh my God.
And so the gist of my bit was like, who possibly could even need that? Maybe truckers, because they like to go long distances without stopping.
Uh-huh.
So, but I was like, I don't even think a trucker would do that, right? And then this guy in the back stands up, and he yells, "Don't make fun of the truckers!" And I was like, but I'm not. I'm just trying to illustrate, because it's not the trucker. Truckers feed America. I understand. But what I'm saying is, a trucker wouldn't even drink this. And the guy's like, I said!
Oh, no!
Don't make fun of a trucker! And so then I recognize there's a problem. And like his buddy is like kind of pulling him back down. Settle down. It's going to be okay.
Come on, Dale.
And then Dale, which is a reference to the Back Table podcast that we,
exactly.
Larry, thank you.
Yeah, check out the Back Table podcast, Jeremy's podcast that I was just on. So full circle.
So the guy, his buddy, kind of yells out, "We're sorry. He just got off the road." And I'm like, it's cool. I am not making fun of truckers.
Yeah.
And now an experienced comedian could have turned that somehow and made it funny or just dropped it and moved on.
See,
but again,
immediately in my head, and I know I'm interrupting the story, but it's my show and I can do that. But I immediately was like, I'm not making fun of the truckers. I love truckers. I have sex with them all the time. And that would have gotten you shot.
Well, I did say, now I don't say that. Oh, should I reveal what I actually said, Larry?
Absolutely. We're accepting on this podcast.
I said, so now, no, this is before I knew Jesus, Larry. Okay. So,
you knew him, you just weren't talking at the time.
Yeah, I said, hey, I love truckers. I've even had my share of lot lizards. And he goes,
you stay away from Sherry, though. She's mine.
So, So I move back into it again. So anyway, the trucker, and he's like, "That's it!" And he takes his beer bottle and he chucks it at me.
Roadhouses,
yeah. Yeah. So it hits the chicken wire and falls down and breaks, you know. And I'm like, I'm out, you know. I'm not gonna keep going. So, but everybody's mad now. Not just that guy. They're like, "Hey, you went too far." He went to, and I'm like, I didn't even do anything. And so there was a side door at the side of the stage, which went to the kitchen, and you make your way through the kitchen to the back alley, basically. So my buddy, this is long before I was married, my buddy used to come to a lot of shows with me, and we had prearranged, if anything ever goes bad with the show, you have my car keys, you drive around back, and I'll jump in and we'll go. Because we thought that's how comedy worked.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I run into the back through the kitchen. Now, this bar was notorious. They made pizzas, right? So there's this big vat of pizza sauce, but I slip and, like, hit it. So I have just red pizza sauce all over me. As I run back through and get to the alley, I look in the distance. Here comes my buddy zooming up in the car. And I was like, oh, thank God he remembered, right? So, and he looks and sees the red fluid all over me. He sees blood is what he thinks. And he's like, what'd they do to you?
My boy. Look what they did to my boy.
So I was like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. So I jump in the car. And then in the distance, coming down the alley, is this like mob of truckers just chasing after me. And so we peel out of there. And true story, the guy did mail me my $50.
I love that. And I remember we were on the road. I forget where to, and you told me that story. I'm like, why don't you do that on stage? It's because it's such a good story. And I know that you did it at least that night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still needs a little bit of work, I think. But yeah, I'm trying to work it in there. That story is not on my current special that, depending on when this airs, just got out or is about to come out, whatever.
Well, and I can't tell you when this is going to air. I wish I could. But yeah. I want to go back to something. You had talked about doing your essentially a Chris Farley routine.
Yeah.
Your first time on stage. Do you think most comics, when they start out, are just essentially doing an impression of someone they find funny?
Not necessarily an impression, but
unintentional.
a mere copy of.
Yeah.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, and I know that there are times I go back and watch old 5-minute open mic sets of mind. Because sometimes I go back, I'm like, I want to see if I can rewrite something. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, that's that comic I was doing. Oh, that yeah. was that influence. Oh, that was that influence. And I didn't know, like, was there, because it sounds like, after that, you were like, I'm never doing this again. And then you came back, and were you still, do you feel like maybe you were still doing kind of a mirror of somebody, or do you think you had started finding out who Jeremy was going to be on stage?
I think I largely was just doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. So I didn't necessarily have like a big influence. Because I recognized after that first show, I probably shouldn't just do Chris Farley stuff. You know what I mean? Plus, like, I was like jumping and falling flat on the stage and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to be able to do this like 2 years before my back is garbage. Right. You know? So about that time, I learned to play guitar for two specific reasons. One, when I was going to go to Southern Illinois, Carbondale, mm-hmm. I thought it would impress girls.
Yes. Yep. I knew that was going to be number one.
And then number two, this was when Jimmy Fallon was like really peaking on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved Jimmy Fallon. I have his album, The Bathroom Wall. And he, just like he did on, before he was the Weekend Update anchor, he used to sit in and do like impression songs on his guitar and mm-hmm. funny song, you know. And so, and actually his big influence was Sandler. So you can see, you know.
Right.
But so, so I started kind of teaching myself a little bit of guitar. And then so I started working my way. I didn't do impressions like that. I maybe did one or two parodies and a couple like original funny songs. Mm-hmm. But it was never like a huge chunk of my show. Maybe 10 minutes out of a half an hour was like the biggest it ever got. And then at one point, eventually later on, I dropped the guitar altogether and then brought it back. And then now I think I've dropped it again. Oh, I don't even know. Yeah.
Well, but I know that, yeah, since you're kind of trying to turn over material, if you don't have, you're not going to be like, all right, here's this song that you've already seen. But you could.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the difference, obviously, between musicians and comedians. Because musicians can go up and be like, you guys will remember this one. And everyone goes, yay! But if we go up and go, you guys remember this one, they're like, yeah, let's move on to something right. else. But like a musical comedian, Stephen Lynch and guys like that, they can go up and play the same song and everyone goes, yeah. And I go, why is it that we can have those songs, even if it's a comedic song, and be like, this is great. I can listen to this over and over again.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, that's normal with even just comedians that are strictly orators.
Uh-huh.
Because I remember watching an interview with Dom Herrera, who had like a prominent character he used to do. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. But he'd been doing that thing for years and years and just wanted to drop it. But if he did a show and didn't do it, people come after and be like, you didn't do the such and such. We paid. We drove 2 hours because we wanted to see you do the thing. He yeah. said, on the other hand, he would do it. And then people come after and be like, you still doing that, man? You've been doing it for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know? So,
proving that you can't please everybody.
Right. Now, likewise, with the songs, I got to a point where people were singing along to some of my songs. And then part of it was cool.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, am I pleasing the crowd or am I making them laugh?
Right.
You know, because they're not laughing. They've heard the punchline five times. In yeah. the, you know. So, I don't know. What were we talking about?
That's a great question. it doesn't matter. These are bunny trails, and this is how I like to do stuff.
No,
I was gonna say. Well, what I was gonna kind of jump around here a little bit, but so you moved up to Chicago.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's go back to that. We'll try to.
Oh yeah, that was the question.
So you moved. But see, this is fun. This is how it's supposed to work. We're just introducing you to new friends. That's all. These are my friends, and I'm introducing you to my new friends. So you moved to Chicago, and you started doing improv.
Yeah.
Okay. And was it because you had lost a bet or you hate yourself? And that's for any improver that I'm friends with. Because I don't know if other people know this, but there's that not so secret joke. Well, some people aren't joking, but joking hatred between stand up and improv, where, you know, people are like, well, stand up is a low art, and we like, well, it might be a low art, but at least we're not improv.
So like I mentioned earlier, I always wanted to do improv rather than stand up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I also knew the Second City was the place to learn it. And so I could go to New York and do it, or I'd go to LA to do it, or go to Chicago to do it. And the reason I picked Chicago was only because it was the closest place to me.
Right.
So once Chicago, now I had already begun doing classes with Second City prior to moving up there in the summers between college. When college was closer summer, I would go up once a week for classes. But so, boy, the amount of auditioning you have to do to get through that, man. So,
yeah.
You had to audition to get in. Then you audition after, like, two levels to continue. Then you audition after, like, four levels, something like that. And then that level is when you actually finally get to perform in front of live audiences. Mm-hmm. So, they say, I think it's like for every person that makes it to that level, you actually outranked about 50 other people.
Yeah.
So you single-handedly had to prove yourself over 50 people just to get that spot. It was in Second City. And then there's another theater there called the Improv Olympic, which is now the IO because of the International Olympic Committee lawsuit. But that's neither here nor there.
I'm pretty sure that the audience could actually hear my eyes roll when you said that.
Then I was
because
doing...
Because people are going to get confused. We came here to see ribbon dancing and some fencing, and all I got was this guy doing 10 minutes about his junk. He just seemed like he was making it up on the spot.
Yeah. So likewise, about when I was wrapping up with Second City is when you have to start at the bottom, mm-hmm. no matter what you've done. So the start at the bottom of the Improv Olympic and work my way through and then made their performance team. Did both for about a year. And then they regularly dismantles performance team. So it's Improv Olympic. And so they regularly break up teams. And so I'd been with this team for about a year, and they told us they're going to break us up. And then what happens is they kind of shift people around, essentially to kind of have a balance. You know, you don't want the team of eight to be all high-energy, off-the-wall people.
Right.
Or all men, or, you know, whatever it may be. All low-energy people. That's mm-hmm. really trouble, right? So as we led up to that, my stand-up gigs were booking more and more and more. And I was like, man, I think around maybe October, this has been 2007, I might be able to go full-time. I might. So worked real hard to pay off my credit card debts because I knew it was going to be tight money.
Right.
And about that time, Second City notified me that my services were no longer needed for their touring company. And then the IO team, Improv Olympic, they dismantled the team. And I was like, you have another team for me? And they're like, yes, but we don't know when. And I was like, boy, the time is right.
Yeah.
Boy, the time is right. Because the thing that bothered me the most is, like, I didn't want to walk out on my friends that I've been performing with for so long.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think it's the time, man. So my lease was about up in my apartment right at the same time.
Yeah, that's just the universe being like, here's every sign you
need. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, if I move back to Springfield, it's going to cost way less.
Yeah.
And then what really opened the door to really make it happen is I probably would have failed if this part hadn't happened, because I didn't realize I was going to be making $100 every 2 weeks. You know what I mean? So right then my grandparents had moved into a retirement community, but they still wanted to, like, come back and visit their house and relive the memories and stuff. So my grandpa said, why don't you just live in our house? You maintain the property. That way we can still come back and visit
Stuff. Yeah.
And so
everything lined up perfectly.
Yes. Yep. And so that's how it all happened, man. So the first few years, I didn't even have to pay rent for anything. I was just paying utilities and stuff. So
you moved back here, started doing stand-up. You weren't clean at that time. Like, I say clean. I doubt you were ever a dirty comic. Probably more like along the lines of I am, where it was dirty clean. Where there might have been some language, but the subject matter is still... Like, somebody might walk out and go... Oh, I think he did cuss. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
You know, when he said this. Oh, he said that? I don't know. It's just funny because you just
broke
it in.
But by comedy standards, I was always clean.
Yeah.
But the show I was doing back then definitely is not like what I would do now at a church.
Sure.
You know, so I told the story on Josh Freeman's podcast, the First Laugh podcast.
no plugs.
Dropped the F-bomb on stage one time ever, and I told that story. And then I used to have one joke where I'd say the S-H word. So I would say that. So essentially I'd swear one time on stage.
Yeah.
And then I did have a good handful of, like, innuendo jokes, I guess. But really nothing, you know, too crazy.
Yeah. And then, and that makes sense. Again, it's the you had some language, but it was never a dirty act.
Right.
So it seems like the transition into clean, just going clean, wasn't even a thought. Am I close to correct?
It wasn't difficult, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, you were just like, oh, let's just do this. Was it because you found you could get booked more doing clean shows?
So.
Okay.
Boy, I feel like I'm on the couch at the therapist's office right now, brother. Here we go. So, so back then.
Yeah, I'm a good interviewer.
I'm really, this is all dad issues. That's what it, no, I'm just kidding. But so,
consider me your dad for the next few minutes.
Back then, so I'm still single back then.
Uh-huh.
Boy, I just wanted to be married and have kids, but I also saw all these old road dogs that I was opening for, just like, you know, they're just like, and then they'd all be like divorced and just miserable and unhappy, you know, and I understand people get divorced, man, you know, I get that, but just how miserable they were on top of it. And it's just like, man, I don't want to be pounding the road at the, you know, because even the clubs, if you're not a prominent name and you're doing a Friday, Saturday, you might be lucky to get, I don't know, 800 or 1,000 if you can really, really push for it, you know, and to be gone that often, that much, that's a hard lifestyle to maintain, you know. And then so guys that were kind of mentoring me were like, the money is in corporates because they'll pay you way more and you'll make more than an entire weekend doing one show.
Right.
And I was like, oh, how do I do that? And they're like, we got to be really, really clean. But a lot of them would be like, but you're almost there already, you know? And so the transition for me to that was not difficult at all.
Right.
And then, so likewise, I started hearing about, well, churches do stuff too. They pay a little bit better, but not much better, but a little bit better. You know, so that's kind of where it started. I had a college agent that I was working for, and I made the first 3 months roughly working for him. I made like maybe $15,000 in 3 months working for this guy doing colleges. Yeah. But the thing was, I was gone all the time, like 3 weeks at a time, home for 2 days, then back out again.
Right.
Now, being single, not a big deal.
Sure.
I enjoyed it, but I was just worn out. And I was like, if this is what I have to do to make money doing comedy, man, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this.
Right.
So then, if you listen back to my podcast, the Back Table Podcast, I talked to Kyle Fields, who happened to work for the same college promoter.
Right. Kyle, our first interview.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we both got hosed. And I got hosed out of about 6,000, and Kyle got hosed out of much more than that.
Yeah.
But so when I worked for the college agent, he made me cancel all my shows so I could work exclusively for him. So now when this guy hoses me and stops paying me and I don't have shows, I couldn't go back to the clubs and the bookers anymore because they're like, you canceled your shows on me. I can't trust you again.
Right.
So then that's when I really had no choice. Now's the time. I got to go and try to do the corporates and stuff. So that's when it really kind of started to flip. And so for a while, it was like 50-50 with corporates, churches, half my shows, and then half like – I was still catching bar shows from kind of how you get where it's like you got some buddies that are like, hey, we're doing a show. You want to, you know,
yeah.
It'd be like 50-50, and then it gradually got more and more. And then now I think maybe three times a year I'm doing a show outside of the fundraiser church corporate realm. You
right.
know, July 10th, Mason City, Illinois.
11th.
11th. Thanks, Larry.
Yep. I gotcha.
There you go.
See, that's what a good feature does.
That's right, man.
What a good feature does for his headliner.
Yeah.
Carries his bags, make sure his shoes are shined, breakfast in bed, which you still have to explain that to your wife. I know I shouldn't have sent the pictures, but I did, and I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel bad about it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And if you notice, I don't refer to guys as openers. I say hit leadoff.
Yeah.
Because I feel like opener is a lesser title, whereas I feel like hit leadoff in baseball – the guy that hits leadoff is very important.
Yes.
So that's why
true.
I say, that's kind of why I say hit leadoff.
Yeah, you're setting up the next guy to knock it out of the park.
Pretty much, yeah man. Yeah.
And one day I'll do that for you.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah. I'll stop bunting every time.
Why did he sack bunt? There's no one on base.
I got this. I know what I'm doing. Oh, not again. So, as the listeners know, and as you know, Jeremy, on this show, we like to share.
This is NPR.
This is my serious voice. No, we're open on this show. We like to talk about things. Sometimes it's what makes us laugh and what doesn't. But today, from what I understand, what you told me before, unless you button hook me now, is that you're going to talk a little bit about something that you don't like, and tell me about something that you love, and that's the most important part.
Okay.
So let's. Hit me with the what you don't like, the thing that you hate.
Okay. So people are this. Okay. I'll just say.
Oh, I love this already. I love it already. You're tentative about even saying it. I'm going to set my feet
any,
for this.
Any dairy-based condiment, get out of my life. Okay.
So no sour cream.
No sour cream.
What else?
Mayo. Get out.
No mayo?
No mayo. Cream cheese? No.
Is mayo dairy? I thought it was egg-based.
Well, yeah. Well, there you go.
It can go, too. Yeah.
Get out!
Get the barnyard out of my house.
And speaking of, the most mind-blowing of all, eggs. Won't touch them. They're disgusting to me. Disgusting. And you know what I call them? And to... when I explain this to farmers, they agree. It's an aborted chicken.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can put an aborted chicken on my plate? What do you no? Get out of here.
We've traveled together. You've seen my diet. You know, nothing bothers me. I'll eat anything.
And the worst part of taking this position, especially with the eggs.
Uh huh.
Now, if people say, "Well, you eat bread." Well, yeah. Stuff that is like eggs are used to create.
Yeah.
I'm good with, but you put egg on my plate, whether it's scrambled egg, sunny side up, that sort of stuff. No, can't do it. So
is it texture? Is it taste? Is it?
It's all the above, dude.
Everything.
It's get out.
Just the mere idea.
And it's or an omelet. People say I'm missing out on omelets. No, I'm not. Nope.
I've never missed an omelet ever. Boy, I really wish I liked eggs so I could eat this pile of garden mess that is.
So, like, I remember being in college or even at hotels sometimes. They've got an omelet station where a guy will make the omelet for
and
you.
Put some sour cream right on top.
Any of that stuff. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to walk right over to the pile of bacon. So the hardest part of taking this position, though, is that... every place you go to eat breakfast, The breakfast meal involves egg.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, coax my... Can I replace the egg with just, like, toast? It's also a low-cost item on the... you know? You know? And some will accommodate, but most are like, no.
No, it... It's
just egg. It's just egg, sir.
Just don't eat it.
Yeah.
Give it to somebody else, for God's sakes. Okay, that so butter? How about butter? You said dairy-based condiments.
Well, I would eat butter.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, because I don't know if that's a... I guess that's a, that would be considered a condiment.
And then, so, and then another one that falls in the same line, any sort of, like, melted cheese sauce is absolutely disgusting to
really?
Me. So
this is fascinating because I thought everyone loved melted cheese.
No, sick. So
squill.
And so while we're at
when did you discover this?
I don't know. Now,
what about grilled cheese?
I'm good with that.
Okay,
I'm good with that.
Okay, because it's not a sauce; it's just a melty piece. Okay.
Okay. But, yeah, so if it's, like, actual cheese, and they've melted it. So if it's, say, nachos, and they put legit cheese on the chips and melt the cheese,
okay.
I'm good. Okay. But if they got a can with a hole in it, and there's, like, a cheese fluid coming out.
Yeah.
No. Okay. But, I don't think, and ranch dressing, too. Sick. Like,
are you sure you're Midwestern?
So even the cheese, I got a ranch dressing story for you too. But even the cheese sauce, we are in Springfield, home of the horseshoe. I don't know.
Right.
Have you explained what the horseshoe is for people outside of Springfield? Do I need to go through that?
Well, I mean, if you don't know what a horseshoe is, I can't help you.
Well, most people outside of Central Illinois are not aware.
They're not. It's the Texas toast and meat of your choosing. Sometimes it's buffalo chicken. Sometimes it's just hamburger patties. You can, my personal favorite is the fried tenderloin horseshoe piled up with French fries, usually crinkle cut French fries, but some places don't have that. So they just put some, whatever, sometimes country style French fries up there, and then they can cover it in cheese sauce and, whatever else you want. My favorite though, and you're going to gag, is the breakfast shoe
with egg,
Texas toast, The sausage, you put sausage on top of that for your meat, and then you pile it with hash browns, and then two fried eggs, gravy, and then, if I'm feeling froggy, a little bit of cheese.
Oh, my.
It's the worst thing on the planet for you, but it's also the very best thing. And you just, you guys can't see it. Jeremy turned green, and just keeps swallowing as I just, he's sweaty now.
Well, even... I won't say the restaurant, but there's one restaurant in Springfield that's notorious. Like, the horseshoe is their thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And my wife just wants to go there all the time. I'm like, what am I going to eat at this place? I'll order the hamburger horseshoe, no sauce. Please put the fries on one side of the plate and the hamburger and toast on the other. And while you're at it, do you happen to have some lettuce, tomato, and onion I could put on the hamburger patty? And then we'll call it even. It's disgusting. So
the native dish of Springfield, and you hate it.
And it's not, you know, I'm very fortunate to have a really speedy metabolism. Okay, so because my diet is not good whatsoever. You've been on the road with me, Larry.
I've seen what type of McDonald's you eat. Even I'm like, wow. Well, what I love though is the guilty look on your face because you're like, well, if my wife's around, I'm not allowed to do this. I'm like, well, I'm not gonna tell. I mean, I just told, but I'm not gonna tell. But you look like somebody just lifted the lid on the dumpster out behind the McDonald's,
and I'm
just, like a just a raccoon that got caught down there. Like, oh, but I'm happy. But, throw it in.
So I have no right to be, but when I watch people eat a horseshoe, I'm so judgy. And I'm like, you put that in your body? even though like the bacon double cheeseburger is like one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, well, we got McDonald's one night on the way back, and I was almost positive you were going to take that double quarter pounder and put your chicken nuggets on it. I was just like, this is happening. I can understand. Like, I understand the growth. And I only get a horseshoe, like, once a year. Because as much as I'm like, I think these are a good idea, I always get one. I eat it, and then I go, that was a terrible idea. My mouth is happy, but the rest of me hurts. I can't get my wedding ring off. My hands are all swollen up. And I have sausage fingers anyway. But then I eat something like that, and I'm like, well, that ring's on there for the next 2 days. You know, there's just, there's no, I, everything, nothing fits. I'm just in stretch pants, you know, just jeggings and a tank top. You're like, don't look at me, I'm
idiots. So, I don't know if I should tell this story. Might ruin my career, but here it goes. So, again, back when I was on the road, single guy before I knew Jesus, Larry.
Again. So again, you knew him, you just weren't on speaking terms.
Yeah. So I was up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right?
Lovely place.
And do the show, find a lovely young lady who wants to leave with me, right? She's got a roommate with her, though. And the roommate is bigger girl. So on the way back, she's like, well, my roommate's hungry. We're going to stop at McDonald's real quick and get her some food, whatever. And I was like, well, all right, you know. And then so we're sitting. So now we're talking. It's now like 2 in the morning. And I'm at their like duplex in the middle of nowhere, right? And we're sitting there and we had, you know.
Every good horror movie starts.
I'm just sitting there like making small talk while like we wait for the roommate to get done eating. So she goes to bed, right? And so she's got it's sick. She's got French fries, and she's got ranch dressing, and she's dunking the fries in the ranch dressing, and then like dangling the fries over her mouth as like the ranch dressing's dripping land on her face, and I'm just sitting there like. And then
maybe, well, that's Upper Peninsula flirting. I don't know if you knew that.
And so
that's how youpers, that's their mating call.
And so the girl I'm with is kind of implying it's time. You're right. And I was like, I just can't after seeing that. I just can't.
No, that was so much of a turnoff.
So I left, and that's the end of the story.
Turn off the mic, so I want to hear the rest of the story.
There is a little side story that I did hold off of that for my career's sake.
Yeah,
but
yeah, we'll discuss that later. I don't want to put you in a bad place. So, all right. So we've established that. Maybe is it just runny foods? It seems like runny foods.
I don't know.
I feel like that's because no cottage cheese.
I would eat cottage cheese.
Okay, see, that's what I'm because cottage cheese. I can use that as a condiment. That says more about me than it does you.
Here's the part that blows people's minds, though.
Okay,
egg drop soup, love it.
I find it. Reprehensible. Yeah. It is so I cannot stand an egg. Everyone's like, oh, it's free egg drop soup if you go in to dine. I'm like, don't threaten me. I'll get it to go.
It's torture.
Yeah. You don't want your egg drop soup? No. Do you want it? Have all the egg drop soup. That's fine. It's just a watery mess. It's just a wet egg. It's just a wet egg.
I remember being at I was on a date. A prominent steakhouse in the area, and
Outback, gotcha.
I get my salad. I'm eating a salad, and I'm like, "Does your salad taste okay?" She's like, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Something doesn't feel right with this salad." And I was like, oh, there's egg in it. I'd yell it loud enough for like the whole restaurant to hear.
Everyone turned. He's like, sir, that's not that girl's fault. Please.
I was like, sick. Who does that?
And like, and everyone's just got a fork full. Every human in here.
That was my last date with her, too.
I bet so, it was. Yeah. Yeah. It probably didn't help when you flip the table. Oh. So we've talked about that. But here's the important part. Here's what I like to end on. It's positive. It's fun. It's sweet. Tell me about what you love, Jeremy. What is the thing that you love?
Well, I'm torn between two things, so I will let you decide which route we take.
Torn between two lovers. I understand.
So, one, which you probably don't know about me, diehard Texas Hold'em player. I don't know if you're aware of this or not.
Huh.
Where maybe 1% of the population even cares. All in with Texas Hold'em. Well, look at that. I said all in.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. And then, I was just going to let it go, though, because you're better than that.
Was not intentional. But then the other is I love conspiracy theories. One or the other. Now, we've talked about a couple in the past, but I don't know if you realize that I am all in also with conspiracy theories to the point I will hear out anybody's conspiracy theory, regardless of what it is. You know?
And you and I have spent a lot of time talking about conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And, I'm fast. Gosh, I don't know which direction to go. I mean, which one do you love more? Which one do you feel needs more defense? Texas Hold'em?
Well, if it's conspiracy theories, it's probably more specific ones.
Yeah.
Versus Texas Hold'em, I don't know. But
see, I think you just chose for yourself. You just.
So what am I saying? What are you saying?
I think you're leaning towards talking about conspiracy theories.
Okay.
Because again, but, I don't know. I'm just assuming that the way you're like Texas. Oh, I mean, I love it. But conspiracy theories.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, I'm reading that. Okay. All right.
And I play Texas Hold'em all the time. I've played in like the Heartland Poker Tour, the one that's on TV and stuff like that. I don't list it as a credit. You may have seen this comedian on Heartland Poker Tour.
You may have seen him losing his child's college fund. Weeping into a pillow.
But if it's any conspiracy theory, I'll hear the person out.
Yeah.
And almost always I'm like, there may be something there.
Yeah.
Right? When even how bizarre it is, if somebody's like, you know, you ever seen Kevin Hart and Chris Rock in the same place at the same time? I'm like, whoa, I don't think I have.
Hold on. Get out of here with that. Wait a second. There's an element of truth to this. My favorite conspiracy theories are when the homeless people come up and tell you their conspiracy theory. Have you ever had that?
No.
It's beautiful. Because these people have time to really
think. They have time.
But, you know, a lot of people are like, yeah, get away from me, crazy person. Me, I'm like, hey, hold on. I've seen that movie with Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts where the government makes him think he's crazy, but he's not crazy. He was part of an experiment.
Oh.
You know, I even forget what that movie's called, but I'm like, I'm willing to listen. You know, like reading about, you know, people with diagnosed schizophrenia that go into the hospitals, and they're like, there were demons chasing me, but then an angel showed up, and I'm like, other people are like, all right, crazy, have your lithium, and I'm like, hold on, let's hear him out. There may be an element of truth to this, so I'm with you on the conspiracy theories.
Oh, there's so many good ones. I get into, where do we go? I am most intrigued probably by the JFK assassination.
Okay.
The Denver airport is an intriguing one. Have you heard about it?
You talk about the Denver airport. Because everyone talks about the JFK stuff, but very few people. I just punched my own mic. I'm going to have to clip that out. I'm going to clip that out just so there's a sound of me punching a mic. But yeah, talk about the Denver airport, because I don't think enough people know about that.
So basically the gist of it is there is a suspicion that underneath the Denver airport is essentially a large, giant facility where America or worldwide, even elite people will be able to live and continue society should some sort of global disaster happen, or you know, whatever reason you may have to retreat to an underground bunker. So now, signs that the conspiracy theorists would point to. How do I feel about it? I don't know, Larry. I've heard it out, but I don't know how I feel about it. It would not surprise me, is my response. Do you believe it's there? It wouldn't surprise me, is my response. Is it there? I don't know. But the construction went $2 billion over budget on the Denver airport. $2 billion.
And if you've seen the Denver airport, it's nice, but it's not $2 billion worth of nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I remember one of my all-time favorite shows going in with this was a show called Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura.
Oh, yes.
Loved it.
Yes.
Loved it. But they do the Denver airport. And there's a guy on there who was a prominent, he was a cabinet member under one of the presidents. I don't recall which one. But he had to be nameless. He wouldn't say who. And all he would say was that such a facility existed, and it's in a prominent airport in Middle America. Okay, and then so Denver, you could argue, I mean, it's a tad out of what I would consider Middle America, but it's, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, and on top of that, the construction took way longer than anticipated, and they were, like, entering and leaving far beyond, like, the trucks would enter and vanish on the horizon much further out than, it's like, where are they going? It's almost like there's a tunnel that they're going down into, you know what I mean? And then there's all these bizarre paintings and signages throughout the airport that sort of direct people. I don't know. So that's all that. There's numerous Illuminati, what are they called, logo or icons or whatever, the pyramid with the top missing or whatever.
Yeah.
So who knows? But it's there.
But so when did you start getting into conspiracy theories? Were you a kid, like hearing ghost stories, and you're like, "Well, I could reason this out," or was it as you started becoming an adult? And when did that happen?
It all started. Let me put my feet back up on it.
Sit a spell.
I'm trying to think back to like when I originally heard stuff, like. I remember my dad kind of really being intrigued by spontaneous combustion.
Yeah.
But I never thought much of it. Where I can really remember me kind of getting into it, you're not going to be surprised, long road trips with other comedians.
I'm shocked. I'm glad I was sitting down when you said that.
So the Denver airport, trying to think what else. Yeah, the Illuminati, and they're legit people too. My, their logo sort of matches the Masons logo, which I believe nearly every president in our history was a Mason. But nonetheless, the Mason logo kind of matches. My grandfather had the highest rank you can have in the Masons within a regional facility. Mm-hmm. And was always trying to get me to like become a part of it. And I'd be like, well, what is it? What do you do? He's like, well, I can't really say.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but why would I have interest in joining? And he's like, I can't really say. And I'm like, well, I don't quite understand. He's like, Jeremy, so I was a small town mayor. Okay. Back then, I was, I think, just an alderman at that point. I had aspirations to maybe be mayor, maybe even a state rep. My goal ultimately was to become governor of Illinois. And he's like, Jeremy, if you have political aspirations, it would probably help you if you were in here. And he even said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what's this all about? What's
Hold on.
But I never joined. But then there was a guy, I don't even know if I should. There was a guy who I knew sort of indirectly, who was in the same grouping, who had a high ranking also. So my grandpa passes away, and the Masons come do sort of a ritual at the funeral, you know. And I kind of say hi to that guy, and I was like, I was just kind of joking. I was like, yeah, had no idea my grandpa was part of a secret society. And he's like, what's that mean? And I was like, oh, I was just joking. He's like, well, we can't talk about what happens in there. And I was like, I know.
Please don't kill my grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love him very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Please don't derail my comedy career.
Yeah. It's just that guy in the back of the room. Yeah. like cigarette smoking man from X-Files. Just back there, just shaking his head. Yeah. Arms crossed. So what is it about, though, conspiracy theories now? Like, as an adult male, what is it that when you hear one that just makes you go, okay, I need to listen to that? What part of you clicks? Because I know what part of me clicks for that stuff, but...
Like I said, I don't know. I'm always just... I'm just intrigued when people are like, did you hear about Q? You know what I mean? And I'm like, what is that? You know what I mean? So, tell me what you were getting at for you. How do you...
Well, there's that part of me that wants awesome things to be real. And by awesome, I mean the word, not like, you know, radical awesome. I'm talking like awesome, the legit meaning of the word. And I'm also grew up a big sci-fi fantasy action movie fan.
Yeah.
And that part of my brain is will always work at the creative side of the brain. That sounded almost a little pretentious, but you knew where I was going. So there's like, you know, I'll hear a song and think, oh, this would be a good song in a movie about this. And it's one of my wife's favorite games to be like, hey, well, listen to this song. And I listen to it, and she's like, okay, tell me what the movie you're. And I'm like, oh, it's this. And I can tell the story. And so when I hear conspiracy theories, I'm like, all right. And my brain starts winding up, and I'm like, okay, this is how this applies here, and this is how this applies to our real world, and man, it would be pretty cool, pretty scary, but pretty cool if these things actually existed. And so I'm willing to give it a shot until like Alex Jones slams his fist and is like, they're turning the frogs game. I'm like, all right, that's too far. There's that part of my brain that's like, that just puts the other part in a chokehold. It's like, all right, fantasy boy, we gotta chill out.
Yeah, I don't know. I could say one of the most prominent ones would be like the JFK Denver Airport. There's no gold in Fort Knox. Trying to think. The MLK assassination has a big conspiracy theory around it.
The Civil Rights Museum pretty much at the end is like, and the FBI killed him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's no longer really. They're pretty much like, yeah, the FBI had him murdered.
I think, yeah, I do think J. Edgar Hoover was...
Hated him. Hated him. And tapped all his phones.
And I think, likewise, I think they had a hand in the Kennedy assassination. Well, and of course, I can't think of the name of the report. The Warren, was it the Warren Report? Whatever report investigated their findings of the JFK assassination.
Right, right.
Well, yeah, you didn't find anything, because the guys that killed him are the guys that did the report in the first place. But so between those... I'm trying to think of some other like bigger ones.
It definitely wasn't Phil. It was Oswald. It wasn't Phil over here.
Now, I can only think of two that I feel are 100, 9/11 inside job sort of thing is one. The only two that I feel 100% certain about, or as close to 100% as I can, is that Q is legit Trump insider, and then the other is the Clinton body count. Are all the people on the suspicion of that was a Clinton hit, are all of them legit Clinton hits? No. But I do agree that, yeah, the Clintons have had some people whacked.
I think there's a lot of people that would agree. And not, I say that, I don't want people to be like, oh, well, hold on, it's the Clinton. No, come on. But if you've made it that high up, you've had some people killed.
Yeah.
I mean, plain and simple. I'm sure Jimmy Carter is the only president that didn't go, probably we should kill this guy. Jimmy Carter was just a good dude.
He's just an innocent peanut farmer.
That guy's still out there building houses for poor folk.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to see anything bad about him. Reagan, on the other hand, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, not a good dude. Not a good dude until the end when he, you know, well, I say the end. I don't. God knows how long he was batty during his presidency, which sounds insulting to people that have the actual, you know, have Alzheimer's. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's, you know.
We'll have to talk about that later. I don't know about this stuff, maybe. But so another conspiracy theory, specifically in the Clinton body count, the most recent. Can we get into this? It's your show. I don't want to go off the deep end here. If we,
I'm just sitting here listening.
Okay. So now, so the Seth Rich story. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now,
I just don't want to get either of us killed,
dude. And I will say, I used to make fun of the Clintons on my podcast all the time. One day, dude, my house. I'm getting ready to leave, open the garage door, and there's a tinted out black SUV just sitting across the driveway. And I lived at the time in a town of 500 people in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And just sitting there. Did I tell you this story?
No.
And I kind of look back at my car, and I'm like, is this guy? And it wasn't pulled in like he's pulling in and like backing out to go the other direction. He parked like across it, so there's like no getting out of the driveway. Sort of.
Right.
And the guy looks and sees me. And he just kind of pauses and drives away. And I'm like, was that a warning not to? But I'm like, why would there be like some sort of federal vehicle in my driveway shortly after I told jokes about Clinton hits?
Yeah.
So, you know, now that I think about that, I would say the Clintons are good people. Let's not.
They are. Let's, you know, they've done some good work. And, I think that's a great place to tie up this show, buddy. that we all agree that the Clintons are great and have never had anybody killed.
Good people. Yes, good people. Very good people.
Yeah, no politician has ever had anyone killed for personal gain.
No, no, no.
I think that's the takeaway from
Jeffrey
this show.
Epstein legit hung himself. There's, you know, he had all that dirt on all those people.
And he just felt so guilty about it.
You know?
Yeah.
Just a coincidence that the cameras went out and the guards were asleep and anybody could have got right to that cell. I mean, you know.
It's great. Sometimes the world, much like your stand-up comedy career, sometimes the universe just lines things up for people. A perfect storm.
So the Clintons are good people.
Yes.
And I was totally joking when I said I believed the body count.
Yeah, that's completely.
I'm a comedian, you know. I was trying to be funny.
Protected by parody. Well, that's what you are. So, Jerry, tell people how to find you, buddy.
Well, I have the Back Table Podcast.
Yeah.
And then if you want to see clips of me, the Amazon special should be out any time now. It's called Who's With Me, Jeremy Nunes. I've got a Dry Bar comedy special, which is free to watch on the app or a dollar if you watch it on their website, and that's called Neighborhood Sasquatch. So you can find me on Dry Bar, the Amazon Prime, or any of my social media stuff is Jeremy Nunes or Front Porch Comedy. If I got in there early, it's Jeremy Nunes. If somebody else claimed Jeremy Nunes, it's Front Porch Comedy. So between the two, you can find me.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show, pal.
Thanks, Larry. And Clintons are good people.
The Clintons are good people. yeah, we're going to end there. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Larry Smith with Convince Me, and the Clintons are good people.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.